two, three.
Chikaja, August Falshet, or KBOO. Welcome to KBOO and happy St. Patrick's Day to you all. My name is Maura Cullen, and I'm joined by one of my favorite KBOO co-hosts, Mr. Per Fogering.
Good morning to you all.
Let me make sure that you're actually on.
Come on.
Are you on? Let's try that.
Yeah.
There you
Am
go.
Am I on?
Oh,
yes. Okay. All right.
Sorry about
Good
that.
Good morning to everybody.
Good morning and happy St. Patrick's
Same
Day to you.
Yeah.
Now, you may be familiar with our voices, as for the last number of years, Per and I have been pleased to bring you Radio Free Ireland here on these airwaves. But that's not what we're doing today. We've been given a special two-hour block of programming to entertain and amuse and inform you on this St. Patrick's Day, 2010. And I'll warn you right now, it's not going to be your usual St. Patrick's Day special.
No green beer?
Sadly, no. And we're not going to be, you know, we will be playing some music, certainly. We'll be playing some fierce tunes, just like we started off today's program with. But we're also going to try to put Ireland in a little bit of context for folks, starting with the many myths and fantasies surrounding St. Patrick's Day itself. Before we do that, I do want to tell you that we started out this morning's program with some great local tunes. This is from Seamus Egan's CD, In Your Ear, which came out more years ago than I care to remember, and has yet to have a follow-up CD. We're still waiting, Seamus. Seamus Egan, of course, is one of the better-known, talented Irish musicians taking up residence in the Portland area. We've been blessed in that regard. We've got a number of great musicians, and some of them were joining Seamus on that last tune that you heard. A couple of reels, The Piper's Despair, Music in the Glen, and the Donegal. And joining Seamus on the banjo was Danny O'Hanlon on the electric bass, Peter Gilmore on guitar, and our old buddy Tom Cregan on the Ilion or elbow pipes. Those particular sorts of pipes that are known and played in Ireland, as opposed to the Scottish bagpipes, which are a bit louder and more raucous, don't have quite the range, but it's a different instrument for sure.
I understand the Ilion pipes, they invented those so the piper can drink a beer between, you know.
Necessity being the mother of invention.
Yeah.
That's probably truer than we know. So we'll play some more tunes from Seamus Egan. We also have some other local bands we'd like to delight you with. A couple of new CDs from across the pond. We've got some Chida, some Karen Casey with John Doyle. That sounds like a good one. A brand new Chieftains record called the San Patricios. It's the Chieftains along with Ry Cooter and a number of other folks, as they are wont to do from time to time. And this is a brand new one. Looking forward to playing it. I haven't heard any of it yet.
I've heard a little bit on other radio stations, and I think the folk music show this morning played some of it.
Very good.
It's a really interesting CD. Of course, you know, we've been talking about the San Patricios on Radio Free Ireland for quite a while. For those who don't know, these were young Irish men who emigrated to this country in the 1840s. And as soon as they got off the boat, they were inducted into the army, and they were sent to fight the Mexicans. Well, they hadn't been there very long when they realized that they were fighting on the wrong side. So they jumped over, they fought for the Mexicans, and they are regarded as heroes in Mexico. I believe there's a big monument to them in Mexico City.
Absolutely right.
They were led by John Riley from Galway, and after the war was over, of course, the Mexicans lost. They had to give up about 40% of their territory, and some of the San Patricios were hanged, others were flogged. I think John Riley was flogged, but he survived. He went on, I think he actually went back to Ireland later in his life or something.
Oh, that's interesting.
And this is a part of history that I never heard this in high school.
Right.
I was just talking to other people that they never were taught anything about this in high school. I didn't learn about it.
Well, no, they were considered deserters on this side of the border, and a lot of dishonor along with it. So there was no bragging rights, and you wouldn't have had it in school. But certainly in Mexico, the Irish to this day are considered with some respect on account of the actions of the San Patricios. And I've talked to many people of Mexican descent that, you know, when I tell them I'm Irish right away, they bring up the San Patricio. So it's not forgotten in Mexican lore. And it's great to see that the chieftains have delved into some of that history.
Yeah, well, Ry Cooter was on the air a couple of days ago. And he said that he grew up in L.A., you know, went through the L.A. public school system, and you never heard about them either, you know.
So close to Mexico.
I know, yes.
Yeah. Well, you will hear about them here on Cable. And another thing I wanted to mention was we're not going to be doing a lot of announcements today. Usually on Radio Free Ireland, we announce a lot of upcoming shows. This isn't Radio Free Ireland, but one gig I will tell you about is if you want some genuine Irish entertainment today, you know, a lot of places are going to be doing a lot of things. Certainly Kells has their, you know, infamous 4 or 6 week party that they put on back behind Kells downtown. They have the tent set up and they're going to have, you know, probably every Irish band in town play there at some point between now and the end of the weekend. For those of you who are adventurous and don't mind the crowds, it's a great place to go. You'll see everyone. But there is a new place that just opened up called the Tillicum, and they're located out on Southwest Beaverton Hillsdale Highway.
They've been around a while. I think they used to be kind of a blues club.
You're right. That's the very place. They're just down, just a shouting distance from the old Dublin pub. And a woman by the name of Mairead Gallagher has recently taken it over. I understand she's doing a full-on Irish breakfast this morning. The Chancers are going to be playing there starting at noon, I believe. And, you know, if you want authenticity, you just can't get any more authentic than the Chancers. I believe they're the only group in town right now that are made up completely of Irish-born musicians. Of course, stick around because that changes every couple of minutes. But certainly a fun group of lads, some good music down at the Tillicum, and say hi to Mairead Gallagher for us. And they're going to be going on all day. So if you're down in that area, you might want to stop in.
What's in an Irish breakfast?
Oh, everything. What they call the whole pan.
Oh.
Let's see, it'd be fried tomatoes, black and white pudding.
Now, what's that?
Oh, that's blood pudding.
Oh, okay.
Yummy stuff. Really good old peasant food, you know. And people who haven't tried it, you know, may turn their noses up, but sure, it wouldn't have stuck around as long as it did and become as traditional a food as it did if it wasn't delicious and oh so good for you in small amounts. But, you know, a fry is bacon and pudding and potatoes fried and eggs and, you know, whatever you can think of. Of course, an Irish farm breakfast being the heartiest meal of the day. You would eat your biggest meal in the morning to
get you through the day.
That's it. And, you know, then you'd have tea and supper and like that. But certainly the whole pan is a delight you don't find in many places anymore. So if you want the authentic Irish breakfast, the Tillicum place seems to, the Tillicum seems to be the place to go. I also want to take a second just to thank everyone that came out to the Haiti benefit.
That was a great concert.
It really was. There was some magic there that night. I'm glad you joined us. And Per also was able to get up and tell some stories about Haiti as well. It was a great night. Thanks, everybody, for coming out. We raised a bit of money to send on to Haiti. And the music was so special that night. I know that everyone that came out really enjoyed themselves.
And a wonderful finale.
Everybody got up for the finale. And, you know, it was just great to see so many different groupings of people. And I thank the Irish community for helping out so wholeheartedly. And so everyone had such a great time that we're thinking about doing another one this summer. So I will definitely keep people informed on Radio Free Ireland which you may know is now on once a month, every third Friday of the month at 11 a.m. And in fact, that's going to be this Friday, so I get to be on the air with you twice in 1 week. It's just an embarrassment of riches for myself. But let's go back to a couple of tunes. And then with any luck at all, we're going to be calling Joe Dillon in Dublin. And I'm really looking forward to this. You know, we said we were going to talk a little bit about Ireland in context. And one of the things that people come up to me and talk to me about Ireland, they know I've been doing this show for a long time, and you know, they'll ask me, what's going on? What's happening in the occupied north? Is it still British occupied? And I say, well, sadly, yes. Right now we're in ongoing peace negotiations. There's been some news on that front. But things aren't finished there. A lot of people seem to think that the war is over, the Brits have gone home, and Ireland has been reunited. Well, it would certainly be a cause for celebration, but it hasn't happened yet. So we're going to be talking to a person who's been really at the forefront of some of the dissenters in Irish politics. You may know that we've covered the actions of one political party in particular, by the name of Sinn Féin, in some detail for some years, and they have indeed been signing all kinds of peace agreements with the British over the course of the last couple of years, and are now firmly ensconced in government. And in fact, the two leaders, Gerry Adams and Martin McGuinness, of the Sinn Féin political party, are in the United States this week, hobnobbing with the folks in Washington, New York, and Boston, and talking about all the great steps forward that we've taken towards peace and towards getting rid of British occupation. But today, instead of talking to them, we're going to talk to the people who still aren't satisfied. One group in particular, called the 32 County Sovereignty Commission, has been active on both sides of the border, and they're not happy with what's known as the Good Friday Agreement, which transfers a number of powers back to Irish elected officials instead of British government authorities. A lot has been misunderstood about these dissident groups, including the dissident politics and some dissident groups that are continuing the armed struggle. So I'm very excited that later on in the program we're going to be talking to Joe Dillon, who is the All-Ireland chairman of the 32 County Sovereignty Commission, which is the leading dissident political group. They've often been linked to the Real IRA, which is one of two still active Republican, I guess you'd call them paramilitary groups. These folks have continued on where the Provisional Irish Republican left off when they had their ceasefire going on 10 years ago now. Actually over 10 years ago now. So this is going to be an opportunity for us to talk to the folks who are still openly dissatisfied with the agreement that was reached, that's called the Good Friday Agreement. And some of the people in this political group, the 32 County Sovereignty Commission, support the continuation of the armed struggle. There's a lot of confusion about that as well, and certainly Sinn Féin, who so recently was connected to the Provisional IRA, and decried by the same British security authorities, are now coming down very heavily against those who are still dissenting. And that's something we're going to get a chance to talk about. So keep it tuned here. We'll be talking to Joe Dillon in just a little while. But right now, we're going to play a few more tunes for you. And we're going to keep it right here in Portland and listen to another track from Seamus Egan. This is from his CD, In Your Ear, which was produced right here in Portland. Joining him on this one, couple of hornpipes, McDermott's and the Boys of Blue Hill. is our old friend Aidan Brennan on the guitar. Aidan slips in and out of Portland on a semi-regular basis. Haven't heard from him lately, but hopefully he'll be back in town before too long. And then also joining him on this set of hornpipes on the accordion is a rather infamous character in his own right, Michael Beglin of the Alberta Street Public House up at Northeast 11th and Alberta. And I'm sure that they'll be going full tilt today as well. So here's a little ditty, a little hornpipe from Mikey, Aidan, and Seamus Egan. Oh, boy, that really takes me back. That was Mikey Beglin, Aidan Brennan, and Seamus Egan from Seamus's CD, In Your Ear, locally produced and brought to you by KBOO Radio, 90.7 FM. You're listening to Maura Cullen and Per Fathering on St. Patrick's Day. And with any luck at all, we'll be joined now by Mr. Joe Dillon from just outside of Dublin. Is that right, Joe?
That's right, Maura.
Thanks very much for being able to join us this evening. Now, Joe, I guess people haven't heard too much about your group here in the States. Well, I'd like to start, first of all, by introducing you to my co-host, Per Fagering.
How are you?
How are you? Nice to meet you.
And I guess I'd like to ask you to start by maybe talking a little bit about the 32 County Sovereignty Commission, why it was formed, what it hopes to do, and how you fit into the group.
Well, first and foremost, Maureen, I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to put our position to the Americans, and particularly the American Irish, you know.
My pleasure, Joe.
And 32 County Sovereignty Committee actually was the original name. It was since changed to 32 County Sovereignty Movement.
Ah.
Now, the people who set up the 32 County Sovereignty Committee were members of Sinn Féin and some ex-members, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it was a full realization that the leadership of Sinn Féin and the Dublin government had been negotiating a process that would violate the national sovereignty of the Irish nation.
Written out in the Constitution way back when?
Well, written in the Declaration of Independence in 1919. The Proclamation of Easter Week.
That's right.
The Constitution of 1947. The 1948 Declaration that was issued to the world asking England to end their occupation of the country. And the historical struggle of our people going back two centuries.
Right.
Plus the Sinn Féin Constitution. And the Constitution of Ogilvy and the Héireann, who were at that time challenging the British in armed insurgency.
Mm-hmm.
So what had been going on was, under what was known as Hume Adams, was there was a connivance to bring the Irish nation into a recognition that a partition was lawful, justifiable, and that they would enter into negotiations without questioning the legitimacy of partition, the British state, or for that matter, the continued presence of the Imperial Parliament, ruling part of Ireland.
Hmm.
As you know, there are 9 counties in Ulster, 3 of them unoccupied, and 6 of them occupied by Britain.
Right.
So we lodged with the United Nations, a delegation was sent to New York to the United Nations, 11 years back now, a protest about the change of the Constitution, right?
Right.
And of the continued violation of national sovereignty by the British and now by the Dublin government.
Right, and this is all around the Good Friday Agreement that was signed back, 11 years ago.
Well, that was the whole thing about the Good Friday Agreement. The Good Friday Agreement, our position was quite clear. We weren't against peace or a peace process. We were totally opposed to any negotiations that didn't protect the sovereignty of the Irish nation.
And this is something that a lot of people over here, I think, didn't understand from the get-go, Joe, that part of the Good Friday Agreement was the surrendering of Articles 2 and 3, which set out Irish sovereignty. So, you know, that was a part of the peace process that wasn't really emphasized too much over here.
Well, that was the key. See, that's the key stone to what's at the happening.
Mm-hmm.
The British and their cohorts in the connivance against the democratic position of the Irish people at the ballot box, which over and over has made it quite clear that the democratic majority of the Irish people constitutes the nation and its democratic decisions.
Mm-hmm.
The British Parliament insisted that the Dublin government must return itself to the 1922 Constitution, which they wrote when they suppressed Dáil Éireann in 1919 after the Declaration of Independence, which was internationally brought to the World Peace Conference by the Irish leaders at the time.
Right. So, So the position that Ireland is in right now is that the partition has been copper fastened by the Good Friday Agreement.
Well, the position you now have is that Mary McAleese, the President of the Republic, right, is now only the President of 26 counties of Ireland, and she has formally invited the Queen of England to Dublin as the two heads of state in Ireland. Now, this is all part and parcel of an effort to get things cleared up before the anniversary of the rise, the 100th anniversary of the rise in 2016.
Right.
Now, the situation is that the copper fastening of partition, it was a complete and absolute copper fastening of partition, but more so than that, it legitimised every act of the British on the island of Ireland in 800 years.
Hard to take.
Pardon?
That's a little hard to take. And, you know, it flies in the face of all the things being said by the main political parties.
Well, you see, this is the tragedy of the American situation, Mara. When President de Valera went over to New York in 1919 with the Declaration, Capitol Hill did not support the Irish Republic. Irish Americans did. They supported a British compromise, which eventually was brought down to partition and a civil war over it.
Right.
And a continued armed insurgency against the British presence up to the present day. Now, there's a connivance, you see, going on by presenting Irish leaders to the American people and to the media that these are great men of peace.
Right.
And that they have achieved what the Irish people always wanted, which was the unity of the people, peace, etc., etc. Of course, that's far from the truth. The truth is that they have violated the sovereignty of the country, they have agreed to a sectarian state, and the British forces, MI5, British police and military are still active in our country in an aggressive and undemocratic manner against our people.
Yes, indeed. Well, you know, there's actually been a bit of news on that as well. I understand that MI6 is now putting odds in the papers in Belfast to recruit for operatives. And, you know, we've got MI5 has a base at Palace Barracks with 400 staff and a bunch of armed response vehicles tootling around the countryside. And, indeed, they have said, you know, now that there's been a lot of triumphal talk about the devolution of policing and justice powers back to Ireland from Britain, but they've made it quite clear that this does not involve the British Army, MI5 or 6, which will still be active in the north of Ireland, I guess looking for Al-Qaeda.
Well, what does it take to make them go?
Well, you see, the point is, the tragedy is this, that Irish leaderships constantly get drawn into a compromise with the British for various reasons.
Yes, we've seen it happen again and again in history, and we've always seen the Irish people rise up after any unsatisfactory agreement has been made.
That's right. Well, if you were to ask any of those people how many flags fly lawfully over Irish soil, if there was no camera in front of them, they'd say two. But when there was a camera in front of them, they'd say one. The fact of the matter is that the Irish leadership, the Dublin government, the Sinn Féin leadership, are now puppets for the British in the north of Ireland.
Right.
And the MI5, as you quite mentioned, have built a massive new headquarters. They're very active. They're active in the whole of Ireland. They have set their sights on insisting that the Imperial Parliament, Westminster, has its way. That is, that there will be two states in Ireland, right? Both of them subservient to what they want.
Well, sure, it's the old divide and conquer mechanism. Dublin has, for a long time, been at least economically inferior and submissive to London, if not, you know, blatantly politically so as well. And by keeping the island divided politically and economically, England can continue to control the shots there.
Well, this is the point. I mean, the very presence of the British in our country, right, has interfered with normal economic activity. It has created an atmosphere around the world which wasn't good for Irish business. It was, without doubt, British policy abroad in its connivance was to damage the Irish economy in favour of their own position.
Mm.
You then have a situation whereby they have more, Britain has more troops on Irish soil than she has in Afghanistan. She's the most powerful military force in the island of Ireland, both in the air, on the sea, on land, and she has now reached a situation where she's going around the world, hosting Irish leaders, putting them forward as the men who have freed Ireland.
Mm.
Well, you know, it's because the fundamental principle what the British have towards Ireland is this: they must smash the Sinn Féin rebellion and restate the Home Rule agenda. So that is that the mother parliament from England will devolve power to Ireland.
Mm-hmm. Well, what specifically is in the constitution that's being abrogated?
The territorial claim to the boundaries, right, Article mm-hmm. 1, and the issue of the nation.
So that is being that is being abrogated in advance then of any talks or whatever?
That was a precondition for entry into the Good Friday Agreement.
Mm-hmm. So they've given up the fight already then.
The Dublin government has, mm-hmm. aye.
And it must also be remembered that the referendum to remove Articles 1 and 2 were not held in the six counties. They were only held in the 26 counties.
Okay, that's right. I thought I remembered it had been voted on both sides. But
No. What was voted on in the north of Ireland was issues of the Good Friday Agreement, but not that one.
I see. So the people in occupied Ireland weren't able to vote on the future of their own partition.
That's right. They had no say in it whatsoever. It was a consultative referendum held on behalf of the British government to do as they pleased.
Now, Joe, I understand that the 32-county sovereignty movement is made up of a lot of different kinds of Republicans, both in the Republic and in the North. And you're the chairman of that group, is that right?
I'm vice chairman.
Okay.
Nancy Mackey from Tyrone is the chairman.
I see. Now, when I was talking to you the other day, you were talking about the proposal that you brought to the United Nations.
Yes.
And you mentioned that earlier. Was there ever any movement on that, or where does the movement stand right now in terms of political action?
Well, it was Bobby Sands' sister actually led the delegation to New York.
Bernadette,
right?
Uh-huh.
And they were hosted there and all, and well received by Irish Americans. Now, the position on that is this: that after we lodged and got a receipt, and the delegation was brought into the UN by Irish-American influence. The American authorities moved to ban the sovereignty movement from re-entry of America.
Mm.
So we have not been able to go back to America to in any way pursue our agenda.
Right. So the group itself and anyone associated with it,
that's right,
is banned from coming to the United States, even if you've been invited by an Irish-American group?
We're banned from entering America, and the sovereignty movement was declared a terrorist organization solely on the basis of what we've done in the UN.
Okay, now let's talk a little bit about that. Let's address that head-on, because there's always been a lot of confusion over the years about what political grouping is involved with what paramilitary group and that. And, you know, certainly Sinn Féin in their day was banned from coming to the United States, and they were connected with the Provisional Irish Republican Army, and for a long time they were banned from entering politics. And, you know, this seems to be, again, something that repeats itself over and over in Irish history as one political group goes mainstream, or, you know, as some would put it, sells out. Another group rises up behind it to deal with the unfinished questions and the unresolved problems. Now, as far as the 32-county group, they have been also connected to some paramilitary groups as well, have they not?
Well, they have been by the media.
Right, this is what I'm saying. And I'd like to give you an opportunity to explain to our listeners the difference between, say, the Continuity IRA, the Real IRA, and the 32-county sovereignty movement.
Well, it's really quite simple. I'll deal with the sovereignty first. The sovereignty movement was set up by members of Sinn Féin and some ex-members and Republicans to lay out the parameters of what the Republic was, its legal rights, and what or what did not constitute a proper settlement.
Mm-hmm.
In international law. Now, before I go, I would like to give you our website.
Oh, yes.
So that your people could look up all of these technical details.
Great, Joe. Yeah, do
now, there's, and our website is very active. It's up to date. Now, I subsequently went to Geneva with Francie Mackey for 3 weeks with the where you lodge. In Geneva, you lodge the violations of human rights for the UN,
mm-hmm.
right? We spent 3 weeks there and we lodged a secondary document there pointing out the violation of human rights by the British and Irish governments against their own nation. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, the position as regards Ogilvy and Héireann, there's two commands at the moment challenging the British. You have what's known as the Real Irish Republican Army and the Continuity.
Right.
Now, the position is very simple and straightforward, as it always was. The military insurgents in the north of Ireland are organised in resistance against the British claim to sovereignty.
Mm-hmm.
The sovereignty movement is a body politically set up solely as a result of the years of struggle and having seen how Irish leaders have been portraying what it was our rights are, solely, if you like, as a watchdog and a pursuer of the political rights of the Irish nation without British interference.
So to keep the other parties honest, more or less.
Well, in other words, we're the protectors of the constitutional position.
Right.
Having lodged it with the United Nations and pursued the international rights, we now make that claim. The Dublin government, even when it joined the UN and when it joined the EEC, in connivance with the British, never raised the issue of partition or the challenge in the Irish constitution. Therefore, the British then didn't object to their membership.
Mm-hmm.
So there has been a criminal connivance. Right?
Right, by I see, yes.
Yes, you follow.
Uh-huh.
There has been a criminal connivance by mainstream politicians to outdo the Irish people who have persistently stated their position.
Right.
Now, our position is very simple. Whether people agree with the use of military challenge to the British or don't, that is not the issue. The issue is the British presence in Ireland. Right?
Mm-hmm.
It's claimed the sovereignty of our country and all that follows from that. Now, we are solely and absolutely a democratically run political body protecting the constitutional claim of our country, i.e. through as is now lodged in international law.
Understood. So the 32 County Sovereignty Movement is a political body, not involved in the armed struggle.
No, that the armed struggle is being carried on by the two wings of the Irish Republican Army at the moment.
Okay, now I understand at least, I think it was Hugh Ward was talking about, there's kind of a pan-Republican grouping that the Real IRA and the Continuity IRA have made an agreement to work together. And that they're considering... Oh, that was Dermot Ahern, sorry, the Justice Minister of the 26 counties,
yeah.
Is now saying that the paramilitary threat posed by the RIRA and the CIRA are equal to the Provies at the height of their power. Do you think that they're trying to whip up fear and... wage a propaganda war against dissident Republicans?
Well, I mean, Mara, the dissidents always led the Irish struggle.
Right.
The dissidents arose in 98, 1916, right?
Right.
The dissidents who led the Civil War. It was the dissidents who set up the Provisional.
It was indeed.
Now, the position is that Irish Republicans in the various organisations now would appear now to have come much closer together and are acting far more, if you like, cohesively together than had been in the past.
And do you think that's because of the Good Friday Agreement?
But I think it's because of a number of things. Now, I can only speak in a moment on the political one, but that's the perceived perception now of the military people, that there appears to be far more cooperation on a national level. The political position with the sovereignty movement is this. We now have what's known as the Republican Unity Forum.
Mm-hmm.
And it is up and running, and it is bringing together the various political people who are opposed to the sellout. And it has an agenda where people can keep their own identity but work towards the national aim.
Right. Now, is that the same as the Republican Unity Network?
Yes, yes.
Okay. Now, one of them
is actually named Republican Forum, so that's where the closeness comes.
Okay. You know, while we're talking about that, I was hoping I could get a chance to ask you about this article in the Belfast Telegraph by Brian Rowan. Are you familiar with that one? Where he talks about informers, and he mentions a member of the Republican Unity Network, Tony Cotney, I think.
Yes, that's all going on here at the moment.
Right. Maybe you could address some of that for us, clear
it
up.
Well, Maura, you see, you have to appreciate that the connivance of British intelligence and Irish style,
mm-hmm.
right, is always designed to give a picture that shows disproportionately to the unity and welfare of the Irish situation. So that situation at the moment is at the leaking in the last couple of days.
Right.
So I don't know what the real truth or the reality of most of that is, but you are quite right. At the moment, there's a situation whereby two senior people there are being named as having worked for MI5, and I know there's allegations for and against on that one, but that, well, I couldn't give you the definitive answer yet.
Okay. Well, I do know that, you know, certainly in the past, pardon me, there have been attempts by the British state to sow division in Republican ranks by spreading rumours about this fella or that fella, and, you know, trying to cause division that way. Another story that's been getting some press over here, but really is still kind of hard to ferret out what actually happened, is the death of Seamus McGreevy and then the killing of Kieran Docherty in Derry. Would you be able to speak to that at all?
Well, I was at Seamus McGreevy's funeral. He lives not far from me. That man, unfortunately, took his own life, as you know.
Yes, very sad.
And, naturally, the rumours are circulating now. I have heard nothing wrong other than the chap reached a situation where he'd done that, right?
Right.
The other one is that the IRA intelligence people had found out that an officer in the IRA was involved with drug people in the Derry area, the Donegal Derry area.
Mm-hmm.
And they had an inquiry, and they arrested him, took statements, and they arrested some criminals, apparently, took statements, and confronted the man in question, Kieran Docherty, with this. And apparently he admitted it. And he was sentenced to death and shot.
And this goes back to the tradition of Republican paramilitary groups needing to police their own areas, because when it comes particularly to criminal gangs and the drugs trade, the RUC, or the now as they're called the PSNI, have never been respondent to Republican neighborhoods with those sorts of problems.
Well, from Kieran Doherty's family, there's claims that MI5 were trying to recruit him to work for them.
Right.
So one can only assume they knew something and were using that as pressure against him.
And it wouldn't be the first time, certainly.
Oh, God, nor in any war. I mean, Britain, all down through the centuries here, has relied upon weakening the struggle again through informers and planting false evidence that led to people, if you like, being blackened. The names were blackened.
Right.
We can go right back to Parnell, Kitty O'Shea. Roger Casement was the famous one.
Indeed, indeed.
When they blackened the man's name over the diaries, you know.
Right.
So in the context that once the insurgency is ongoing in the six occupied counties, the fact is that people have to be very aware that the Irish Republican organisations are very disciplined bodies of people. this attempt by Britain to kind of show them as being undisciplined, mm-hmm. and not tightly controlled and all, of course, is untrue.
Right. Well, certainly even Scotland Yard has made the comment that the IRA was one of the most disciplined groups they had ever had come up against.
Well, so, I mean, yeah, exactly. It's the national military body challenging the British in their own area.
Right.
And all down through Irish history, the one thing the IRA had to its credit was it was centrally commanded and was very disciplined.
Right.
One thing I'm wondering about is, what is the way forward? I mean, what can we expect to see happen?
Well, we're hoping that the American people would come on board from the sovereignty point of view and put pressure on their own government to allow us back to America and use the challenge at the United Nations as an alternative peace process that Britain should leave Ireland. I mean, when you consider that the present Sinn Féin party still considers Britain as an occupier, they won't sit in Westminster, there shouldn't be much in turning them around to support that.
Mm. Well, it seems like maybe it all is not as simple as that, because this week Martin McGuinness and Gerry Adams are here in the States, you know, rubbing elbows with all the mucky mucks in Washington. And apparently McGuinness and I guess Robinson, I'm not sure which from the DUP, is going to be on a investment junket. They're looking for corporate investment in the north of Ireland. So, you know, it looks like McGuinness has been sort of really focused on that whole end of it, of investment. And, you know, Sinn Féin has been very anxious to brush any dissent under the rug and say that these folks have no support. And, you know, basically I've noticed Sinn Féin saying a lot of things about dissident Republican groups that was said about them, you know, not so many years ago. But it seems like they're very anxious to...
create a warm and welcoming business climate.
Right.
Well, I can put it to you this way. The Sinn Féin party, and Martin McGuinness now, who would be considered now a man who's in the pay of England.
That's right.
He draws his wages from Westminster.
Right.
He is pursuing a policy that the head of the state that he's in the government in is the British. The national flag of that state that he's in is now the Union Jack.
Mm.
He's also using the very same tactics against the real Republican people as he was used against him.
Right.
It's the same set of criteria. Like the issue of the junkets and the Irish American investment in Ireland is always welcome.
Sure.
But I'm quite sure there'll be twice as much of it if the British went, and that we would certainly have a far happier country. And whatever decision the Irish people want, we only want the British Parliament to say we are leaving Ireland on a certain date, i.e. in terms of sovereignty. We then want to arrange with them for many, many years of financial contribution for what they have done here.
Reparations, right.
Yes, for a long, long time.
Right.
And the issue of what type of government follows with the unionists or the nationalist people will be solely a matter for it to be democratically worked out among the Irish people.
Sounds good to me.
So in other words, it only takes a vote in Westminster to end their claim to sovereignty, to end the problems in Ireland at that level.
Right. Well, now, one of the problems going on, of course, is the attempt to marginalise dissident Republicans. And I guess it was Hugh Orde who recently said that the violence in Ireland has fallen to an acceptable level. Shades of Reginald Maudling, of course. But this is a concern that they seem to feel that they can deal with a certain amount of dissident activity as long as, you know, they can make things appear to be, you know, all smoothed out on the surface. And again, this gets back to, you know, a lot of Americans think that we had a peace process. Gerry Adams is over here now, you know, with Peter Robinson, and everything's great. But, you know, we still have violence. We had a a major car bomb in Newry in front of the courthouse some weeks ago. We have MI5 and MI6, as well as the British Army, trotting around on the streets and in armored vehicles. And, you know, at the same time, Adams and McGuinness is over here shaking hands with the politicians, saying everything's grand. But, you know, what do the people of Ireland have to say about acceptable levels of violence?
Well, they don't see it as any acceptable level.
Ah, you wouldn't think so.
You know, the point is, of course, when it's put that way, the point is, what right has one Irish man to tell another Irish man to settle down and live under British rule?
Mm-hmm. None.
Right. And the point is, if Irish insurgents are out under arms against British forces, what right has an Irishman to call them traitors and British forces the lawful force?
Indeed.
So the point is, what's ever happening in the north in recent months now is that large numbers of provisionals who went along with Adams and McGuinness have now seen through the con job.
Mm-hmm.
And they are more vicious against those people than the people who left early on.
Aye.
Now, the British police, that's the PSNI RUC thing, they can only repeat the same message that the RUC had.
Which is?
That they're going to campaign it, they're going to win it.
Right.
And the Dublin, you know, having signed away the national territorial claim, having conned the Irish people into believing that this was the way. And more, it's a very important thing to remember, is that Adams and McGuinness never put a full picture before the Republicans. They brought them along on various stages. Not mm-hmm. a bullet, not an ounce. It'll never happen.
Right.
All of these things were done to check where the resistance in the movement was and to remove it before they made their move.
I see.
So they were fundamentally not a leadership, but a military junta.
Mm.
Political and military junta. When they done what they done.
You know, and it's particularly disturbing given their histories and the way they've used their connection to other, you know, Republican heroes,
yeah,
pump up their own legitimacy. You know, certainly Adams has written about his time in the H-blocks and referred over and over again to the hunger strikers of 81. And it must cause a great deal of sore feelings amongst Republicans that aren't buying it.
Well, it has done so. I mean, there's been some of the finest men who fought for Ireland ignored. Some of them died in poverty. Jackie Hughes.
Right.
I was at his funeral. Adams and McGuinness and then went down there and they literally took up all that funeral. They can't look a Republican straight in the face. And it's the age-old story. Once you're bought, right?
Yeah.
You turn vicious.
It seems to be the case. I noticed that there's a book coming out that the Dirk worked on a bit. Ed Maloney, of course, I've disagreed with him in the past, but he's got a new book out, Voices from the Grave. I haven't had a chance to see it. But I understand that, you know, of course, Brendan was a vocal opponent of the direction Sinn Féin was taking. And I understand that there's some pieces in the book where he talks a little bit about that.
Yes. See, Ed Maloney, as you know, and these people are professional journalists, so
right.
Their political view is not really one that comes in here. But, yes, he is bringing out a book, and there'll be relevations in that area and all that. I mean, I know Martin McGuinness and Gerry Adams myself well enough. I've met them many times in places and that. The point about the two men is this. They were built up to do a job, right,
mm-hmm.
in the last few years, right?
Right.
And the day will come when that job is done, when they'll be brought back down to be got rid of.
Hmm.
Because, you see, at the end of the day, right, Adams and McGuinness are trying to justify the guerrilla campaign prior to Good Friday, and the unionists are totally opposed to it still, and they're now caught in the situation where they're using John Hume's argument against the IRA, which was used against them. And they have no legitimacy in their argument at that level at all.
Right.
In fact, there was less of a British claim to the north of Ireland prior to Good Friday than there is now. Because
mm.
yeah. The south, the Southern Republic, the Republic of Ireland, it was called, its territorial boundaries and claim was in the Constitution. Now that's gone.
Mm.
And it was Sinn Féin agreed first to do away with that without any consultation with anyone.
Right. Now, certainly the numbers of so-called dissidents are growing, it seems to me. And another thing I wanted to ask you about was Jerry Majot. I understand that he's to go on trial, and there's been a deafening silence from Sinn Féin. This is a fellow that, you know, really under the terms of the Good Friday Agreement, he shouldn't be prosecuted at all, but it's widely suspected that because he was critical of Sinn Féin, he was picked up not long ago on a charge dating back to 1981.
Well, the origins of where he stands today then goes back to Adams and McGuinness again.
Mm-hmm.
They did not even negotiate an amnesty clause. They agreed that criminal prosecutions could continue right up to the present day for any actions carried out by the Republican Army. Right?
Boy, that's not the impression you got from the wording of it,
No, but they're
they
a black and white.
They left themselves enough loopholes in the language that what seemed to be an amnesty really wasn't.
But it was not. The prisoners were released as convicted felons, and if they were to re-offend or become a threat to the British, they would be picked up and put back in prison, as there are several.
Uh-huh.
Now, the whole thing was a con job of an immense proportions.
Right.
And what's happening now, you're quite right, the growth, there was a big white line picket in Derry yesterday for that chap, Donnelly, Don's O'Donnelly, he's in prison, and he's got 7 months there.
He was. He got his arm broken by the police back in 07, and they gave him a 7 month sentence for resisting arrest for his trouble.
That's right, yes. Now, all of this is going on, harassment of nationalist youth, and the main spokespeople now on behalf of the police, and the most vicious on behalf of them, are former Sinn Féin, or Sinn Féin people. Martina Anders and all of that in Derry.
Right.
Like, what you have now is a growing disrespect for them and a realization of what the people were sold a pup.
Right.
In terms of Irish republicanism.
You're listening to a special St. Patrick's Day program on KBOO 90.7 FM here in Portland, Oregon.